The cyber landscape is constantly evolving, creating new challenges and opportunities to defend against sophisticated attacks. At Northrop Grumman, we provide a wide range of capabilities to stay ahead of these threats. To learn more, visit northropgrumman.com/cyber.
Welcome to the Defense and Aerospace Report's weekly cyber report sponsored by Northrop Grumman. I'm your host, Vago Maradian. President Biden has signed the administration's executive order to improve national cybersecurity, a move the White House has been working on since it took office to better defend the nation against the series of attacks that have made headlines from Russia's SolarWinds intrusion to China's Microsoft hack, and most recently the DarkSide attack or ransomware attack on the Colonial Pipeline that shut down the nation's biggest pipeline, leaving Americans up and down the East Coast without gasoline. That situation is improving now. Joining us now to discuss the executive order and more is retired United States Army Colonel and legendary aviator and cyber guru, J.C. Vega. He is the Chief Information Security Officer at Devo, a cloud-native logging and security analytics company. And his last job before retiring from the United States Army was as one of the directors and founders of the Army Cyber Institute at the United States Military Academy at West Point. JC, thanks so very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Vago. It's a pleasure for me to be here with you and your audience.
An absolute pleasure having you on. No, thank you so much for joining us, JC. And before we get started, our daily podcast is sponsored by Bell. Leonardo DRS sponsors our global coverage. Fincantieri Marinette Marine sponsors our coverage of naval strategy. General Atomics Aeronautical Systems sponsors our coverage of strategy. General Motors Defense sponsors our technology coverage. And Rafael Advanced Defense Systems is sponsoring our coverage of air and missile defense. JC, you know, we now have obviously the new executive order. Last week, we had a discussion with Jim Lewis of CSIS on that. You know, talk to us about what you like about the executive order and where you think, you know, what you think needs more work.
First of all, I really do like the order because it's coming from the president. And that means it has the visibility and attention of the senior most leader of our country. And one of the challenges that we've had with cybersecurity is that it's a technology problem. So it's a problem for the technologist to solve. This is not a technology problem. This is a whole of organization problem. This is not only a cyber security issue, it's a national security issue. And by putting out this executive order, it brings all elements of the government, everything that the government has to bear on this problem, not just the technologist. So I really like that about it. Now, the challenge with any kind of policy is implementation. They have some very aggressive timelines in there. And if it meets its intent, we will be better for it. We actually will improve the security of the nation's infrastructure. But vision without funding is hallucination. I remember somebody telling me that.
So what are the challenges of this, right? So when you and I have talked about this, you've looked at the whole ecosystem and said, you know, in a sense, the internet was created as an open, free, collaborative, unsecure place in some grade, right? I mean, when you go far enough back, right? I mean, the only people who were on it were a handful of people, you know, at DARPA. Then it opened up to be a collaborative new world. And now all of a sudden, we're sort of surprised that it's a wild west where everybody's taking advantage of everything. What are some of the systemic things that have to happen, right? Because if you look at the executive order, it is very aggressive, but then there are also going to have to be some serious structural changes, right? In how we approach this, maybe.
What I read in the order, it's an evolutionary change, and that is addressing the problems that are here and now. And that's only going to go so far. It's like building a skyscraper on a sand bed or near the beach. It's not going to survive an earthquake as opposed to built on a solid foundation. But that doesn't mean that we should throw our hands up and do nothing. And so what this addresses are some of the key elements that have to happen given the environment that we are in. And so one of them that's been covered multiple times is removing the barriers to sharing threat information. There's laws that prevent some of that from occurring. And especially if you start getting into, in the government, we talk about Title 50, the intelligence, Title 10, the military response, then you get into the law enforcement, then you get into the roles of National Guard. This is part of that separation of powers. And part of that is to protect our establishment. Keep in mind, we don't always trust everything the government does historically. Remember, we kicked out the original rulers. So that's embedded in our culture. It's embedded in our laws. It's embedded in our constitution. And that's constantly a pendulum of privacy and security that sways. But there comes a point where we have to reconcile that. And there isn't one simple answer. That's where we have to be collaborative in this effort.
And so what does that collaborative relationship look like, right? I mean, for some, right? I mean, I think that this administration is trying to demilitarize a lot of things, right? Shift greater authority to Jen Easterly, for example, who is at the Cyber Security Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA, as part of the Department of Homeland Security. Alex Mayorkas is somebody who's got some really solid cyber chops at the head of DHS. You know, what's your sense on what this right balance looks like that gets us more toward a security mindset than the offensive mindset in which we've sort of moved into a little bit, right? I mean, that is some of the criticism that, you know, we've been less good at defense by focusing on offense, as a consequence, leaving vulnerabilities that nefarious actors have exploited.
So first of all, Jen Easterly is a great selection for that role. We served in the military. She's a retired colonel also, and just really was a great leader while in service, and that's followed on to other areas. And now here she is in this position. So the people that they picked are very qualified to lead the nation in this area. So some of the challenges that we have with what we're doing here is there's the policy, then you get into the practice. And how do we bring these different parts together? One of the sections has to do with responding to vulnerabilities and incidents, and then standardizing our playbooks or our response, our plans for the response. But one thing we got to recognize in this discipline, the technology is developed by the private sector for private sector use that also has the ability of taking that commercial off-the-shelf product and putting it into the government. This is not something that's designed for just one customer. It's designed for the myriad of customers that are going to use this. So the private sector has to have a seat at that table when you're having the discussion, because they're the ones who are going to have a large part of the response to any kind of threat. Now, goes back to the threat sharing and the information sharing. If we know there are threats out there, there's multiple ways to share that the government has in place. You have InfraGuard, you have CISA, you have InfraGuard's FBI, CISA's Department of Homeland Security. And as you connect with them, they're going to share some information, but they're not going to fix your systems. The fixing of the systems starts at the end user level. And we think about, well, how secure are these systems? You talked about it earlier. It was built on an infrastructure that was not intended to be secure. It never was intended to be secure from the start. And everything was built on top of that. And so now we have this insecure foundation. We're throwing technology over it. And now we have to not only secure the technology, but we have to address the fundamental vulnerabilities that are in the foundation. That's a pretty big challenge for any one company. And now you think of this one tool, this one piece of software that has to work in any number of environments that the developer never imagined. So that's a grand challenge of our discipline, is how do we secure it? And that's why I say this is an evolutionary step. The revolutionary step is something different from what we have today.
So how does, so looking, so what do those two pieces look like, right, JC? So how do we get from, you know, as somebody, right, because you're somebody who's both expert at the granular level, but also the strategic level of this, where, what are the things that we need to do on the evolutionary scale? What are the things we need to be thinking about on the revolutionary scale? Because you've got Chris Inglis in there now. You've got, obviously, Ann Neuberger in there now. How do we need to, what are the two elements there? What would your advice be as the administration continues to work on this, right? Because, I mean, we know all the players in there. It's not like they put the EO out and they think, okay, that's the end of it.
No, and that's only the beginning on a long journey. So we have to have an environment in a collaborative space where collectively we can stay ahead of new and developing threats, but not only be able to look at these threats, but we get actionable information that allows us to have, call it decisive confidence, where I know I'm doing the right thing based on the threats that are out there with the tools that I have to have the visibility of some of the challenges that are out there. That's a mouthful of things there, but you got to have visibility across the environment. You got to understand what threats are out there, how they're coming at you. You have to aggregate this information. But as we've discovered in SolarWinds, and when we talk about technology, keep in mind, everything that we see in cyber threats is, they're not something new. We can see it in the physical world. We see the espionage that was happening long before cyber. So it's just a new tool that the adversary or the threats are using. But as you see them pivoting, you see them adjusting to the environment, we have to adjust and stay ahead of them. And sometimes that means you're the first victim, sees something, they say something, and they share it with the others. And being able to share that information at machine speed in real time so that we can have, take decisive action with confidence to respond to that new threat. That's the evolutionary. Revolutionary, there's the concept that has lost a lot of steam of the cyber moonshot of what is going to replace this current infrastructure, because it is, we are not on a path to prevent bad things from happening or at a level that we have an acceptable level of risk that remains. So that residual risk, we're still not there yet. And we are seeing attacks every day. It's a headline. And there's some changes coming with that. But bottom line is, we can still do a lot with this current infrastructure to protect it. There's still many things we can do. And you look at the CIS top 20, RSA just released a version 8 of the top 20 vulnerabilities that somebody should take care of on a regular basis. And if you do those top 20, you save, you can protect your environment very well. But to do that in this environment, it's a constant, and you can't always do all 20. You have to pick and choose what your priorities are. So, but at least we can do that. At a minimum, you should be doing that.
You know, you mentioned something that was interesting, right? I mean, none of this is new. And the question I have for you is, is the nature of the intrusions any different than they've ever been? Are the nature of the penetrations any different? Or are we discussing them more? Because if I go back, there are a whole series of very large, persistent breaches. I remember it was some highly classified breaches during the Bush administration that prompted that administration's major cyber initiative. You know, we had persistent threats living, whether it was in the Joint Staff computers or whether they were at the State Department or elsewhere in government. Is this something we're just reporting more on, JC, or have the nature of these changed, or are we just being a little bit more open about them?
Well, there's three points to make there, but one, to answer your question, we are being more open about this. So first thing is, you've heard of Sutton Law. When he was asked, and this goes back to Willie Sutton, you know, why do you rob the banks? Well, because that's where the money is.
Right.
And so one, that's where the money is. I can target multiple people at once and I only need a small percentage of success and I can make it lucrative. It's worth the return on investment is there. Okay. Then a colleague of mine, Ed Skotis from SANS, Aaron, one time him saying, if a criminal isn't using cyber to commit crimes, he should be sued for malpractice. and the idea is that's the game today. Those are the rules. So those are two points there that, you know, why cyber? It's where the money is, and it's also the means to get that money. Now, the third part, why are we hearing a lot more about it very recently here? And so I had this conversation with a bunch of colleagues, and we didn't come to agreement, but I'll argue this point here. The Colonial Pipeline ransomware attack is the first major cyber incident that had an impact on behavior that was local and direct to the American public. Now, what do I mean by that? You saw a change in behavior where people were rushing to get gas, places were running out of fuel, and now you had this supply system that could have impacted your operation or your day-to-day operation in a major way. Think of trucks that can't deliver their goods. We changed laws that now, or I say we removed restrictions on certain laws that tankers can now travel on certain roads where they weren't before. All these things happened immediately. But if you were on the East Coast and more on the South side of the East Coast, you saw that firsthand. And when was the last time we had lines at the gas pumps? It was probably many instances before that, but the ones I remember is when I was a kid were in the 70s, where we had the odd even license plates and you ran out of gas.
Right.
So here you saw a cyber attack that had a second and third order effect that impacted the behavior of everyday Americans locally in their community. Other attacks that you hear about hit, mentioned Home Depot, the OPM attack that anyone with a clearance had all their information stolen. You had Target, you had Equifax, name them. And I'll ask you, how did your behavior really change? You got another letter in the mail that your credit is potentially compromised and they're going to give you 1 year of credit protection. Do you even do anything for that anymore? Do you even care? And the issue that we have here is this last cyber attack demonstrated just how effective it can be on changing and impacting our daily lives of everyday Americans.
A lot of wisdom there, JC, and I would like to believe that this was something that did focus Americans onto the magnitude of the challenge, and that basically all of us have an obligation and a responsibility in this ecosystem to behave responsibly, right? I mean, the question is whether or not that will be the case. Our time's running short, and I want to devote a little bit extra. Let me ask briefly. I mean, so do you think that it is going to change people's behavior, or is this going to be something, and overall attention to this? or is this going to be something like so much else we've got, where people just sort of forget about it? You know, well, it was just a couple of days. I mean, I couldn't get gas for a couple of days. It's fine. Right. I mean, gas stations went from 88% of gas, they nearly 90% of gas stations in DC didn't have gas, to now they've got gas. And, you know, Americans have a tendency of forgetting stuff the minute they don't have to think about it. Do you think it's lasting change this time?
There are several incidents that I thought were lasting change. And my hope, and hope is not a method, is that this will have the desired impact of increasing the cybersecurity posture of our, not only our infrastructure, but also in our day-to-day operations that we have. And what that means is, and I like to, when I talk about responsibility, we have this concept of shared fate. We are all going to be impacted because we have an interconnected ecosystem. And I look at it that we have, there are several types of responsibilities. Is there's individual responsibility. Is one, am I creating the threat? Am I creating the vulnerability that's allowing the threat to use me as a vector to get into an operation? And people say, well, I'm not interesting. They wouldn't do that. No, you're not, but you probably through a degree of separation are connected to someone who is interesting. So you need to do your part. Now, there's also the team and that local effort of we have to protect this environment. Now, as a leader within that, is you have to resource, you have to make this a priority over other things. And that's where it starts getting into some of the challenges. One, are we going to make the resources available to everybody? And two, are we going to make it where it's not cost prohibitive? Using the example of, you know, the recent pandemic that we have, how much did it cost an American to get the vaccine? Nothing. So I'm not saying that cybersecurity should come at no cost, but the cost of entry or the cost to be secure should not be at a prohibitive level. And that's just not money. That's where I could implement it. It's user-friendly. I'm able to operate in this environment, and I don't need special skills to do it. It's, I use it a lot of times. I talk about the transportation system. At 16 years old, you are part of that ecosystem, driving a car with your license, and you're getting out there, and you are a, you know, a higher risk, everybody, but we have made it to where we have it as secure as possible so you could operate in that space along with everybody else who is sharing that ecosystem with you. Right. And cybersecurity, we need to get there where we have this ecosystem that security is embedded. It's fundamental. It's not an afterthought.
Let me take you, we've got less than 2 minutes left. I want to get your sense on CMMC. Obviously, the cyber security model maturity certification process started in the last administration. A little bit of debate and discussion about the fate of the program, potentially with the government looking into some actions and decisions that were taken vis-a-vis the board. You know, where do you think we are? Where do we need to go? What was good about it? What's not good about it? Where do we need to go with this?
So it's a great concept. It's a great model. And as you look into it, what it's basically doing is ensuring that the technology that supplies the Department of Defense has a standard of security that one, it you could evaluate and you compare it against, and it puts it out there. So in the end, we're securing the ecosystem, but it was also intended to allow many organizations or many products to enter the ecosystem. And that's where I think it's falling short. It's a great model, but to apply that model and to pass the certification that is necessary to do that, it has become a barrier to entry. So if you're trying to bring more secure products in, what you just potentially did is limited the pool of security tools that will enter the ecosystem. And this is not just security tool, this is any tool, but we're limiting the innovation of some of those technologies of tomorrow that can address today's problems. But if they're not certified with this process, then they're never going to see the light of day. And we've been trying to do this for some time. It was supposed to be not this last 2019 is, I believe, when it was supposed to be implemented, and we still haven't seen anybody actually earn the certification.
JC, thanks very much for joining us. Always a pleasure talking to you. Thanks so much for joining us. Look forward to having you back on because, there are so many more things I want to run by you. Thanks again.
Hey, thanks for having me, Vago, and to your audience. Thanks for listening.
Everyone is a contributor at Northrop Grumman, and every day is an opportunity to help defend our nation and our allies. Visit our careers page at ngc.com to learn about joining the Cyber and Intelligence Mission Solutions team.